It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break.
But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. Break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with Daniel DeGree. He's a digital ecologist with a company called Madpipe. They're a marketing leadership firm. And we're going to talk about top small biz marketing mistakes that we often make when we're thinking about scaling our business. But before we jump into that, be sure to go to businessexponential.com, download your copy of our 10 Steps to a $1 Million Business. It's a great report and going to make it so much easier for you to grow and scale your business in a way that you can sell it. So businessexponential.com, you'll see an orange bar at the top of the website. So click on that and download. Now, these days when we think about marketing and we want to grow our company and scale our efforts, there are so many different options that we have, don't we? There's all sorts of things on social media. There's all of the in-person stuff with speaking. Hey, I'm doing podcasting. And often there are so many other things going on in our business, isn't there, that the thought of just focusing on the marketing can be crazy making. So if there's one magic bullet to it all, and that's something that our guest talks about today, it's consistency. And you know, there's that classic story of the tortoise and the hare. And you're like, yeah, I know, and the tortoise wins. But there's a reason that the tortoise wins. And let me tell you the story. Once upon a time, there were two friends. There was a tortoise and there was a hare. And they were great buddies. They knew each other for a long time. And, you know, as you are with your friends, you've got a way of bantering. The hare was known for being really fast, and the tortoise was a slower kind of guy. And one day they're kind of ribbing each other, and the tortoise kind of, you know, something got a little under his shell, and he turns to the hare and he said, "You know what, dude, I bet I could beat you in a race." And the hare bursts out laughing. He said, "Come on, pal, who are you kidding?" The tortoise says, "What are you scared? You scared? You chicken?" The hare says, no, we'll have this race. We'll have this race." And another friend, the rat, came by and he said, "All right, you know, I'll be the referee. I'll make sure it's all fair." So they work it out and they say, "All right, we're going to run from a mile. We're going to run from where they were at the hare's home, and they were going to run to a banyan tree about a mile away, right near where the rat lived." So they pick a day. The rat blows his whistle, and on your mark, get set, go. And the race begins. Now the hare takes off at lightning speed. And I sort of know this, having done 5K races. There are people who, whoo, they blow right past me. And he soon ran completely out of sight. And the tortoise began the race. He was, you know, he's slow. So he's running, not even running. He's going at a slow pace. And it was almost laughable. I mean, the rat was probably doubled over in laughter. So everyone's thinking, yep, the hare's going to win the race. The hare's going to win the race. So the hare reaches about a half mile in, and he stops and he turns around, and he can't even see the tortoise. I mean, it's just, he's gone so far beyond him. And he said, "You know, I got time. I'm just going to hang out in the grass and rest." So, you know, the hare has a snack. He drinks some water. He lays down in the shade. He takes a little bit of a nap. But in the meantime, the tortoise kept moving slowly and steadily. And the hare slept for a long time. And when he woke up, he looked around and didn't see the tortoise. He figured, well, guess the guy's really, really slow. So he gets up, he starts to complete the race, and as he's approaching the finish line, he was absolutely astonished because the tortoise had already reached it. His buddy had already passed him. Now, all right, cute little Aesop's fable, Nina, I get it. I heard it when I was in third grade. Why are you telling me this? And what does this have to do with business? What it has to do with business, and what it has to do with marketing, and what it has to do with scaling your company is this. It's the principle of consistency. Putting one foot in front of the other. And it's that consistency that's so important. Because very often what I've seen with companies is that They may engage in one marketing effort and boom, all of a sudden they don't quite get the results that they want, like because they're not seeing the results in the cash register. And they go, oh, well, obviously Facebook ads don't work. And obviously, you know, this networking group doesn't work. And this group doesn't work. They're not giving it enough time. And they're also not measuring what are all of the different steps in that process to see where there could be a disconnect. And is there something that could be fixed? And that's something we're going to talk about with our guest today, Daniel DeGree. So a little bit about Daniel. Daniel is a digital ecologist, and he's going to tell you a little bit about that phrase. He's a digital ecologist at Madpipe, which provides marketing leadership for brands that want more clientele. Sound good? Don't we all? Daniel is the author of the book, All Marketing is Dead, and he's the external marketing director for multiple organizations. His ideas have appeared in Inc. magazine, Smart Blog, Media Post, and Success magazine, and he's a frequent presenter at thought leadership conferences. And we're delighted to have him here on Business Breakthrough. Hey, Daniel, thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Nina. Thanks for having me.
You know, as you probably have experienced, there are two extremes with small business owners. Either they are completely hands-on up to their elbows, or they are completely hands-off, like, I don't want to touch it, you know, set it and forget it. So why is neither extreme realistic if you want to grow your company from your perspective?
Well, if you micromanage your marketing, you have to be an expert in a lot of different areas. You have to be an expert in audience analysis and consumer psychology. You need to know a lot about technology and how people interact with it. There are a lot of different factors that go into marketing besides knowing your business, knowing your industry, and knowing your current customer base. So managing your own marketing is sort of like performing your own brain surgery. It's not advisable. And, you know, it's tempting, of course, you know, but what I always tell business owners that want to attempt it is, look, you know, I know you know a lot about your business, but what you really know is about the clientele you're currently reaching. And if you're okay with the clientele you're currently reaching, and that's what you want, is to continue to reach the clientele at the pace you're getting and grow at the pace you're growing and grow at that pace, then yes, manage your own marketing. But if you want to reach the people that you're not reaching, if you want to access the audience that you don't even know that is out there yet and find them and reach them, then you have to step outside of what you know. So all the opportunities are in the unknown space for the business owner. At the other end of the extreme, people that want to just dump the marketing, I don't want to be involved, it's not why I got into this business, there's a real flaw in that, because then we lose the real value of what you know. So, you know, every business owner potentially is a thought leader, because at one time, in order to found that business, they had to be a visionary. They had to be a leader. They had to have an idea of who they wanted to talk to and how they wanted to service or provide products to that particular audience. We need to be able to pick the brain of that thought leader routinely and have that person step into that role and really flesh it out, not abandon ship. So, you know, the commonplace attempt to throw all your marketing on sort of an outsource agency, just let go of all of it, who says, well, we'll do a quick analysis, you know, spend a couple of sessions understanding your business and then sort of take it over and you never really have to be involved again. That ensures a life cycle where your marketing begins to get farther and farther away from your audience, and ultimately you'll probably not be doing business with that agency in a year or two's time, and you'll sort of start over.
Yes. And I would also think that when you try to set it and forget it, you're also not keeping track of the metrics to see, okay, you may have dumped a lot of stuff onto the agency's plate, but what kind of results are you actually getting? And the agency isn't going to know that unless you're able to tell them what kind of sales reports you have.
Well, that's an important key role. So within the business, you know, so at Madpipe, I believe in three key roles being insourced for the marketing department of the business. So when you, even if you don't have a marketing department, you want to start thinking in terms of every business needs a marketing department. So one of those roles is the thought leader. Another that we've talked about. Another role is, that's the person that has the vision for where the brand is going. Another role is the subject matter expert, the person that understands the product or service better than anyone else in the company. That may all be the thought leader, or it may be someone else. So you may own a string of restaurants, but you may not be the chef or the person, the nutritionist, right? So that person's a subject matter expert. And then the third role is that of essentially the person with the sales numbers, the sales data scientist, if you will. That person needs to give us a constant stream of information, everything we can sort of gather and pull out of that person about, you know, what we're closing in the way of business. And that sort of brings up another issue. You know, marketing oftentimes is thought of as fluff by people that are serious about numbers and hard results. And so, you know, it's a big challenge these days to find somebody that will talk to you about return on investment in any concrete manner. And I think business owners need to really think about three different numbers that they focus on with their marketing efforts. Mm-hmm. Now, one number is the number that you put in, the inputs, right? And so many people don't measure that. How many people did you follow? How many posts did you do? How many emails did you send out? And how often? You know, how many blog posts did you write? And how long were they? These input numbers are really, really important, because when we get output numbers, if you don't have them, we can't tell what's working. We can't correlate effective behaviors with results versus ineffective behaviors or behaviors that need to be improved.
Clarify that the inputs are actually the activities that you are doing consistently. Is that what you mean by inputs?
It could be, when we say you, we just have to clarify, it would be whoever the implementers are for mm-hmm. the company. So you've got that brain side of the company, which is the thought leader, the subject matter expert, the sales leader, et cetera. But you also need the hands side of the company to have a marketing department. That's the implementers, the copywriter, the social media and email person, the PR person, et cetera. And those input numbers are what those hands are doing. They're actual activities. If those aren't reported consistently, if they're not tracked, then you can't tell what behavior is driving results. So that's a key number to get is the input numbers. Another number that you need is the immediate outputs. You know, because marketing is not hand to mouth. It's not A to B. So it's not the same as advertising, and it's not the same as sales. There's an overlap. But, you know, with a salesperson, you make a phone call, you close a sale, that's it. Money changed hands, and that person eats, and your company gets business. Marketing isn't like that. It's more like you post something, you follow somebody, you begin a dialogue, they begin to share your material, people find that material, they find your website, they go to your website, they read something, they sign up for an email list, they get an email offer, and ultimately they buy something. So there could be A to B to C to D to E to F, and finally a sale. Sometimes you don't have to go through that many hops, but there are lots of different marketing activities that convert lots of different people at different points in their consumer mentality and behavior. So what you want is, what are the immediate numbers? How many followers did we get? Followers are, of course, cheap currency. You can get followers, but not all followers are created equal. Maybe they're not influential followers. Maybe they're not followers who do anything with that. They're sort of passive. Or you might get really powerful followers. Then how many likes did you get? Likes, again, that's like a pat on the back. It's pretty cheap currency. How many shares did you get? That's really powerful currency. How many people forwarded that email you sent? How many people wrote a comment on that article you posted? Those are all kinds of immediate results. They're not sales, but they're that second set of numbers that you really want to know about and correlate with the first. So you can see when we do X, it creates Y. And when we do more of X, it creates more of Y plus Z, if that makes sense.
Okay, it does. And before you move on to the third number, is there a hierarchy of, let's say, outputs that have heavier value? Like, I would think commenting shows some degree of interaction, whereas a like is more passive.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, of course, it depends on the nature of the comment and who's commenting. But right, a comment is an interaction in a stronger, more tangible way than a like, which takes a single click and is easily forgotten about. It always surprises me when I go to my Facebook profile and it has a list of my interests. And I'm like, when did I become interested in that? I don't remember liking a ski resort. I think they posted some picture of a dog one time in the winter and I liked their page, and, you know, so it's not a very tangible result. You know, the highest value is, of course, a share or a referral. If you can get somebody to share your content to their audience and they are an influencer or they have an audience of equal or greater size to yours, that gives you exponential reach. And so that's an incredibly high value thing to do. So ideally, you know, yes, there is a hierarchy and you go after the highest value interactions and you understand that when you get the others, you can do things to maximize them. So if somebody likes your content, you can now invite them to like your page. And if you can get them to like your page, you can ask them to do something else, like participate in an offer or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, terrific. So you mentioned three numbers to track: inputs, immediate outputs, and the third is?
That's the one that everybody loves. That's conversions. And so a conversion, there's a couple of things to think about with regard to conversions that most people don't. So first, you have to define as a business, what's a conversion for you? It's not as simple as saying, well, what I really want is more customers. Yes, everybody wants more customers. But we have to acknowledge that people go through a certain pathway. They go through a trajectory in order to become customers. Some people think about it. Some people talk to their friends. Some people ask their husband or wife what they think, et cetera. There are different things. Some people follow you for a while. So what is a conversion? So there are two kinds of conversions, macro and micro. And what one type of conversion is a conversion where somebody has expressed interest. They've signed up for your mailing list. They've sent you a contact form. They've done something that it's a buying signal. We've gotten a behavior out of them that is beyond the pat on the back or a share with somebody else. And the other type of conversion is about money changing hands. And of course, that's what we really want. You want to probably declare conversion types for your company. Goals that are particular conversion types and monitor both. Because what you want to do is say, all right, well, when somebody contacts us, that's a conversion. But then when they contact us, how many people out of those who contact us buy from us? So if somebody sends us a contact form, it doesn't mean everyone who sends us a contact form is going to buy. Or even if you're a product-based business, you know, somebody puts something in their shopping cart, that should be counted as a conversion, even if they abandon the cart. Because if we don't know about that, we can't measure how many people are going through with the sale versus abandoning the cart and what is causing that differential. And what can we do to improve those numbers, to translate that micro conversion into a macro conversion? So yeah. Those conversion numbers are really, really important. And then ideally, if you're getting all three numbers, your inputs, your immediate outputs, and your conversions, you should be able to see a correlation between what behaviors on the part of our marketing people, our implementers for our company, you know, whatever our company may be, what behaviors have an immediate effect, and then what immediate effect has a long-term effect of generating conversions. And then within those conversions, what can we do to improve the quality and type of conversion that we're getting?
Okay. So with many small business owners, there's so many things out there that are guaranteed to be the way to success. It's, you know, it's going to be Twitter. It's going to be Facebook. It's going to be Instagram. It's going to be Pinterest. And for the busy business owner, you just want a magic bullet. So, all right. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Is there, in fact, a single magic bullet that can catapult a service business?
Well, there are two answers to that, maybe even three. So the first and easiest answer is certainly not. There is not a magic bullet. And so, I mean, we can believe whatever we want, that, you know, if we circle a tree backwards five times, sacrifice a chicken, that ultimately we will get more clients. And so that belief is very powerful in lots of ways. There's a belief in technical wizardry instead of voodoo. There's a belief in various kinds of venues. There's a belief in tools. You know, if I just have the right tools, I can do it. There's a belief in the reputation of certain businesses. Oh, you know, this company's been around for a long time. They must be successful. There are all kinds of beliefs. And in the end, there's what works, and what works is never secret. It is never something that you really have to dig up. It is always something that's industry standard, well documented, and requires the one thing that makes it not magic, which is consistency. It requires that you do something over time, and it also requires you to be involved. So the second answer about is there a magic bullet is, well, sort of. The magic bullet is you, because the thing that people leave out of their marketing is the consistency of you. It requires that you commit to something that you're gonna be in for the long haul. It's sort of like what Warren Buffett said about stocks. You know, if you're gonna buy a stock and then jump out the next week because the stock went down a little bit, you really shouldn't play the stock market. You're playing for the long game.
Right.
So with marketing, it's like that. But also, if you're not going to be involved, it's kind of important. So you can't just ignore your mutual fund and hope that it all works out okay. You do need to be reading your reports and checking in once in a while. So that consistency of you is the magic bullet. That's the one thing that if you were going to say something, if somebody said, Daniel, what do you think at MadPipe makes marketing actually work? What is the key ingredient that makes somebody effective? I would say it's the consistency of you. And the third answer is that there's sort of an answer, but the answer is different for every business. So, you know, it takes a lot of exploration and analysis to find the thing that's going to be your thing. It isn't just going to be, oh, it's Facebook. That's not a simple enough answer, or it's too simple an answer. I'm sorry. It's going to be the thing that you're doing on Facebook that is really igniting your audience, getting inside their head, channeling their exuberance, and getting a hell yeah response out of those people. Whether it may be something you're doing in email, but whatever, it may be a particular strategy that is cross-channel and really straddles email and Facebook and your blog, et cetera. There is something that's going to ignite every business if there is the consistency of you. But what that thing is, nobody can tell you yet. And if they say they can, just within a simple phone call or off the cuff or make a general statement, they're trying to sell you the Manhattan Bridge.
Okay. I was thinking of a big bottle of snake oil, but that kind of goes along the same way. Great. So you refer to yourself as a digital ecologist, and can you talk a little bit about how marketing is really integrated into all aspects of a business? I mean, I don't think it exists in a vacuum, does it?
Well, no, it can't. And ultimately, marketing is about the living species of people to whom we're marketing and with whom we're interacting. And there's more than one kind of species. So to give you an example, in marketing, we have very common terms for things like we have influencers and amplifiers, and then we have sort of the passive members of our marketing ecosystem. These are people that just sort of consume our content but don't really do anything. We have people that are brand champions who whatever we do, they sort of laud it and shout it out loud. They may not be the most effective people, but they will make noise when we do something. There are all kinds of different roles within a given marketing ecosystem. And we want to not only know about that within any given brand, we want to know who is filling those roles for a given brand. So marketing itself is an ecosystem, and it overlaps with other kinds of ecosystems. So, for example, in marketing, it would be foolish for me to do these days, for me to do, say, an event marketing thing, an event, and not to publicize it in social media. That would be a mistake. Okay. So, and also if I'm doing that event, not capturing some video and some images for use in things like YouTube, Pinterest, email, not tying that in with potentially some PR, and not tying that PR in with potentially my own website and my blog for search value and for some other things, that would be a mistake. So modern marketing ties multiple channels together into an ecosystem. Done poorly, that's just cross-posting a lot of stuff. Done well, you understand how reaching out to someone in one channel and who you reach out to may have an impact in another channel, and you strategize accordingly. This is not something, again, the average business owner learned in business school, and it's not something that they need to fully understand. They just need to understand the principle, which is why, you know, being a digital ecologist or a marketing strategist, in my case, I need to have that kind of knowledge, because I need to ensure that the people executing the marketing are thinking along those lines. But you asked sort of a larger question, which is how do those ecosystems that I mentioned overlap with the ecosystems of the larger business? Mm-hmm. For instance, sales and operations and so on. And that's really important. So there are lots of ways, but a simple one that I'll mention is the same. What makes marketing effective, we talked about it earlier, is the consistency of you. Well, how does that really look? So part of it is having consistent marketing meetings that are very powerful, having a consistent set of processes that are routine, having consistent numbers that are reportable, and a process for analyzing those numbers and drawing conclusions. And having a general structure to your marketing team. We talked about the different roles, subject matter expert, thought leader, et cetera. So those tools or those concepts have immediate application to other parts of the company. So a company that's willing to get serious about their marketing, it's amazing when you see it happen. If they're willing to get serious about their marketing and implement intelligent structures, implement and sort of professionalize the process, what happens is that bleeds over into their business operations. They start finding that the way they collaborate and communicate with other members of their team that don't have anything to do with marketing changes. It evolves and it becomes something that's much more productive and much more concrete. People get happier because their employment rests on sort of a concrete basis instead of a subjective one. People don't get turned off by meetings anymore because the meetings are powerful and productive and they're centered around what the highest value thing is that we can achieve in a given meeting versus a lot of talk. And so there are lots of ways in which the marketing ecosystem overlaps with the operational and sales ecosystem of the business and produces a better company. So it doesn't matter where you start, which area of the company you start in to improve your business overall, but marketing is a great opportunity to do it to be a starting place. And the reason why is because in every other area of your business, you have the illusion that it's sort of autonomous and you control it and it's just about you and how you want to do it. You don't have that luxury in marketing because in marketing, it's clearly an ecosystem because you're not alone. Your whole audience is part of that. Their response will determine how the process evolves. So you can't just blindly keep posting the same thing and ignoring what people are doing with what you're posting. You have to use that information to evolve your strategy and inform what you're posting. It's the same reason we can't outsource it to an agency and just be hands off and check out as thought leaders. It's the same reason that we have to understand different audience ecosystems. And so the nice thing about that, it no longer matters what you or I think our business should be doing for marketing. The only thing that matters is what our audience thinks and what they're responding to. So it's really cool. It lets our audience have an equal role with the highest ranking person in the company in determining how to optimize your business in the area of marketing. That translates over into other business operations and revitalizes the company. So that's what it means for ecosystems to overlap. And as a digital ecologist, my role is to see those overlaps and to help bring them about by helping companies be effective in their marketing.
And that's fascinating because it looks like when you find the way to scale your marketing and the team and the approach and the metrics that you're looking at, it really is, so it sounds like a microcosm of scaling your company overall.
That is correct. You know, again, there are lots of entry points to revitalizing your business, and focusing on scaling your company is supremely important. You can enter that through marketing, through sales, through operations, through lots of different areas of your company. You can even enter it through the issue of accounting and bookkeeping. It doesn't really matter what department you enter it through, as long as you're willing to translate what you learn and the principles that you are implementing into every other aspect of your company. So marketing, I just think, provides a lot of dynamism for that. You know, one principle of scaling, for instance, is you shouldn't wear all the hats. You shouldn't do everything. In fact, you should offload the things that we don't need you to do so that we can preserve you for the things that we can't do without you. So when we're designating a business owner thought leader, that's not a conceit, and it's not sort of a fluff role that we give that person. What we're saying is, look, we don't want you telling us what to post in Twitter, because that isn't where that's not the highest value thing you can deliver, and that will distract you and waste time and slow us down and bottleneck us versus what we do need you for. We absolutely have to have you as the person that is the closest to how this company has been run, the closest to who your audience has traditionally been and has the vision about what you want to achieve. So we need to be able to access that. So back off telling us how to do Twitter and step into leading us down the path that we need to go down. Let us do our part, you know, and you do your part. That's a premium idea for scaling your company. So if you start in marketing learning that, what's great is it just immediately translates into other areas where you may not be doing something efficient or effective for your company scale.
All right, terrific. So Daniel, as we wrap, we talked about one big flaw being the set it and forget it mentality, or I've got to have my finger in every pie mentality. What are a couple of the other big no-nos that you've seen where you know, business owners have either mucked up the works or just gotten in the way of developing really effective marketing systems to help scale their business?
Sometimes it amounts to that attempt at a magic bullet. The business owner will be up at night thinking about how to grow the business, see a commercial or notice some link on the web, click it, and suddenly put the marketing team on a whole new footing and say, all right, I made a decision last night. I paid my $99.95. We're going to have this company manage our SEO. Huge mistake. You really need to have a digital strategist looking at those decisions before you make them and not sort of make sudden knee-jerk decisions that can really throw the marketing car off the tracks. Another is sort of the automated marketing pitfall. So a lot of people insist on a belief in set it and forget it. And, you know, even if they're not going to outsource it to an agency, they'll look for some kind of tool, and it'll be a tool-based decision. It's sort of like you can go to Sears and spend $1,000 on that Craftsman tool set with the nice red drawers and all the different wrenches and things that you might need, in the belief that you're going to work on your car on Saturdays and save money on auto repairs and so on. The truth is, on Saturdays, you're going to go out to your garage, you're going to look at your tool set, you're going to love the way it looks, and you're going to go sit on your porch and, you know, and have a beer and listen to it. You're not going to do your own car work. So tools are not the solution. And so constantly shopping for the automated set it and forget it tool set, it won't help. It'll be counterproductive. So I think a lot of that just boils down to the owner of the company needs to take his hands off of those things, which usually happens because he hasn't found his true role or she hasn't found her true role in a marketing team. They haven't started to build a marketing team. They haven't thought of themselves as a thought leader. And there's a whole lot we need that person to do. So, I mean, there's nothing more powerful than when the owner of a company starts talking to the audience in a powerful way. I don't mean posting random stuff to Twitter. We don't need that. But in a really professionalized way, when there's gravitas and there's dignity to the communication, there's nothing more powerful than when the owner of a company comes out and really holds court with the audience. We need to be able to set that up with a business owner. That's a high value activity for them. So I think those are the main pitfalls, is step into your role, not the roles that really aren't your role.
Okay. And that's great. And what I also liked, as we bring it all together in allowing the audience in a way to be on the equal footing with the business owner and have the audience of the business owner and for the business owner to be there with their client base and their market, it really does help to have, if I think about it in military terms, you know, the same way a president of the United States will say, this is our military objective here, and then allows the generals to determine what is the military strategy. But the overall strategy involves maybe tanks, maybe drones, maybe something else. But there needs to be someone overlooking all of those different pieces. So, you know, you made a great point about not segmenting it so much in terms of looking for the tool or the bullet, that it all really needs to integrate well together so you're developing a powerful message.
Yeah, and at the risk of substituting for that, looking for the exact right person, which is also a pitfall. It's just like looking for the exact right tool. Of course, that role that you described, the role of the digital strategist, you know, that's what I do. And of course, I'm a big proponent of the president of the country not being the one standing there wearing the helmet directing where the tanks go. You know, there's a reason why Truman will put Eisenhower over there, or Eisenhower will put Patton on a hill. It's because, and Patton will decide where the tanks go. It's because that separation of roles is really key to professionalizing the process. And there's also a reason why Patton doesn't actually drive those tanks and allows people on the ground, effective leaders do this, you know, allows people on the ground to make decisions on their own and to report back with how they modified their orders or interpreted their orders because of what they were experiencing. The moment you sort of make the process rigid and sort of try to wear all the hats, regardless of whether you're the owner or my role, the marketing strategist or the person on the ground, the moment you try to wear all the hats and ignore the other constituents involved. So, you know, effective leaders don't make all the decisions, and they don't leave out the constituents in their audience. You know, the president allows the general to sort of modify and interpret orders on the ground. The general allows the colonel or the sergeant to do the same thing because that person is close to what's happening. And that's how it works in marketing and in every other area of business as well. You don't blindly implement orders or a policy. So I really think it's important to allow for that differentiation of roles.
Excellent. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for your insights and really appreciate your being with us on Business Breakthrough.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it.
Hey, thanks for listening. Remember, go over to businessexponential.com right now and download our 10 steps to a $1 million business. We lay it out for you step by step. The 10 building blocks that'll have you building and growing your business so it's not so dependent on you. Won't that be a relief? Of course it will. So do it right this minute so you don't forget. You'll see it there on top of the homepage. Go to businessexponential.com.